I believe that being well off isn't the same as living well. That's the Money Mind Shift with Dr. Tom Mata. Welcome. Great to have you back. To any new listeners, great to have you join us. To remind you, I'm called Dr. Tom, and I'm here to explore with you how money decisions shape our lives, not just our bank accounts. We call this Money Mind Shift, and our fundamental belief here at Money Mind Shift is that financial well-being isn't just a matter of spreadsheets. It's about aligning money with meaning, with identity, with values, you know, with what counts. In this episode, we look at how to retire. Now, I hear you say, oh, bummer, here's another expert telling me I've got to think about contribution rates and I've got to work out my retirement lifestyle and how much I might spend on different aspects of everyday life, etc. Don't worry, that's not what we're going to do today. In today's show, I'm going to show you that retirement planning goes way beyond the numbers, way beyond the maths, and way beyond the mechanics. The perspective I invite you on is that retirement isn't the end of work, it's the start of a new chapter. And the best plans include not just savings, but they also include purpose, they include relationships, they include health, and a bit of courage as well. So that's what we're going to explore. And very soon we're going to speak to Christine Benz, who's the author of a book called How to Retire. We get her insights. But first, before we get there, we go down the rabbit hole. Here I am down the rabbit hole where we look at fun and weird things that make me think about the subject. And what I thought I'd bring into this rabbit hole today is a card that I found in a gift shop here in Edinburgh. And it's one of those cards that you give a colleague when they retire. You know those cards where you like write best wishes for retirement, etc. And it's a card, it says happy retirement, and underneath the happy retirement it says, as you go into this next phase of your life, may you enjoy the very best that life has to offer. And the text is accompanied by an image of a beachside. So you see the deck chair and you see the sea in the background. And of course, it's sunny. And there's a table next to the deck chair. And there's a glass. And the glass doesn't look like it's a glass of water. It looks like it's a cocktail. And I think this image, both the image and the text, they speak a lot to what we think retirement is. You know, it's just, you know, it's essentially not work. And it's, you know, all the things that you would do if or when you're not working. But I think also there's a number of misconceptions in there. I mean, first of all, I'm thinking, gosh, it must be so boring to just like sit for the rest of your life in a deck chair looking out over the ocean. I also wonder, you know, is it really just one phase? Yeah, so it says here, as you go into this next phase, I wonder, is it just one, right? And is it really the best that life has to offer? I mean, is it really the case that work is so bad that we are just, you know, dreading and hoping for retirement all the time? So I think there's a lot in there that we can unpack. And I look forward to showing this to Christine. Right, let me get out of this rabbit hole very quick. Who better to speak to than the author of How to Retire, 20 Lessons on a Happy, Successful and Wealthy Retirement. She's Director of Personal Finance and Retirement Planning at Morningstar. They're based all over the world, but she is based in windy Chicago. Welcome to the show, Christine Benz.
Thomas, it's wonderful to be here with you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
I wanted to start our conversation by inviting you to be totally unfair to the clever designers of a retirement card. I just picked one which I thought was sort of, you know, typical.
Very yeah. Typical.
Yes. I just wanted to invite you to, you know,
poke holes in some of those ideas.
Yeah, Thomas, I love this exercise. And a funny anecdote is I'm looking at this and I'm looking at the beach chair. And one of the versions of my book actually took the very plain looking cover, which I really like, of my book, How to Retire, and they put a beach chair on it. And I was like, no. And they're really not able to visualize anything beyond these canned images that we've all been fed about retirement. So they equate retirement to just this extended vacation. And of course, you know, as you move through your working career, you do want more vacation. You do get tired. You want more time to relax. But the problem is that people do not ideate beyond that, and they don't recognize that there are some important things that most of us are getting from work. So some sense of purpose, some sense of structure to our days is actually a really positive thing, as much as you might crave unstructured time. A sense of identity that many of us get from our jobs.
Yes.
And then perhaps the most important thing is relationships, the social interactions that we have through work. And so I think stopping the ideation about retirement with relaxation and sitting on the beach or watching Netflix or travel, those are all great things. Do more of them in retirement. But you also need some of those things I just talked about, the structure, identity, the purpose, the relationships.
Yes. And it doesn't say it explicitly, but it kind of sounds like, well, work is, of course, bad. It certainly isn't the best that life has to offer. And you've got to wait for retirement until you get that, right? So that's problematic, isn't it?
Definitely.
In this phrasing here of, as you go into this next phase of your life, you know, phase as in singular, rather than that there are multiple phases.
So there is sort of this shorthand thing for retirement as the go-go years, sort of the post-retirement, good health, often pent-up demand for travel, higher spending period typically, moving into the slow-go years, which maybe roughly sort of mid-70s to mid-80s, then moving into the no-go years later in life where maybe some health issues have flared up and people are generally staying pretty close to home. I do think it's very healthy, as much as it's not fun to think of ourselves as older and infirm. It is helpful to visualize that older self if you can. And another thing I would mention is that I've become a huge believer in phasing into retirement quite gradually as well. I do think that the idea of a hard stop of one day I'm working, the next day I'm not working at all, it's not a great model. And it also doesn't reflect how many older adults are doing it, that many older adults are continuing to transition very gradually into retirement. They probably like some aspects of their work. They don't like other aspects of it. So if you can phase into retirement gradually, that's a very healthy model and a better one than the hard stop model.
Is that what you see in the US then as well? Yeah, this sort of phased retirement.
Yes, generally, yes. But I will say that here in the US, it's quite aligned with income. So the healthier and the wealthier among us, generally speaking, are more able to continue working longer. The perverse part of it is that they need to do it less. Whereas you might have people who have lower incomes, they might have physically demanding jobs. For them, it is often a hard stop.
I would say that's probably the same here. And you can see why. I mean, if you were, I don't know, a roofer, say, for your entire working life, you can see how when you retire, that would perhaps happen with a bang.
Yeah, the suggestion that everyone should continue working past age 70 or something like that, it's just not realistic. And it doesn't jibe with the jobs that many people do.
Really, one of course of the main themes of your book that we are used to thinking or preparing for retirement in terms of numbers. And we're pretending as though it's just a maths thing, right? So we're thinking about our contribution rates and whether we should up them. We should look at like what the retirement pot will be at a certain point and whether that will be enough.
Yes, exactly. I often cringe when I hear people talk about, okay, I'll retire when I hit the number, whatever number it is that they've arrived at, that they've determined they need to have saved. It is really wise to think beyond the data, the numbers, and think about lifestyle and retirement to get a vision for how you will spend your days, to recognize that maybe you were getting some benefits from work that you want to be sure to replace in retirement. For some people, the answer may in fact be to continue working, even if their financial affairs would very much suggest that they could retire if they are deriving some valuable benefits from work. Working longer may be the right answer. In fact, I have a neighbor who has been very engaged in his profession, and his wife is retired. She had a demanding career in the technology industry. He works in a lab. He's a scientist and loves his interactions with other human beings. And he and his wife, after reflecting on the decision about whether he should retire at something, you know, sort of approximating a traditional retirement age, made the decision that he should continue working longer. And he seems perfectly happy doing so.
Yeah, funny. Yeah, so counterintuitive, right? But makes a lot of sense. You said there earlier that you need to visualize your retirement, and I think you qualified if you can. are there some techniques you came across that people can apply?
So I love the idea of people in the years leading up to retirement to do a little bit of experimentation. If you have vacations, or better yet, if you have some sort of a sabbatical program at work, if you can dabble in some of these lifestyle changes that you're considering, I think that's a very, very valuable strategy. My husband and I actually did something quite similar last winter. We had thought, you know, Chicago is a cold city in the winter. So we had thought, well, and we spent a month in Florida. We rented a condo, and my husband joked that it was like we were in the witness protection program. We didn't know anyone. We're just like these anonymous people going about our business. And so it gave us some ideas about like, don't do that. Like, we would need to build a social network preemptively before we show up in a place, I think, or at least be thoughtful about where we would meet people.
Fritz Gilbert, in your book, he's introducing the checklist. Can you speak about that briefly, what the checklist is?
Yes. So Fritz has a wonderful blog called The Retirement Manifesto. And some of it is US-centric, but I think most of it would not be. And his most popular posts on the Retirement Manifesto relate to these checklists. So he's super methodical. And I love the idea that it kind of takes you through more mundane activities. Like if you have photos loaded on your work computer, make sure you get them off, or make sure that you're pulling, if you have contacts who you want to stay in touch with post-work, make sure you get those off your computer, those sorts of things, but also more sort of visualization exercises and also, you know, exploring the financial aspects of retirement. So he goes through all of it. And he takes it in a sort of a phased approach. So I think it starts with 5 years leading up to retirement. And then, you know, as the term shortens, that the tasks get quite concrete in terms of the things you need to get done. But those are wonderful checklists that I would point people to on Fritz's blog.
The first checklist is for 5 years out. Speaking about why he chose 5 years, he says, I chose 5 years intentionally. If you're more than 5 years from retirement, you shouldn't worry about it too much. Make sure you're saving continually, increasing your savings rate if you can. If you get a 3% raise, save 2% of it and only take home the extra 1%. Automate everything you can, but don't sit there and obsess about retirement when it's 10 years away. And I thought that was interesting. It was quite contrarian, perhaps, to you don't have to think about it too much when you're quite far away from
it. But I would also say I sort of set out in my mind age 50 is a real line of demarcation for many of us. And that is a time where I would encourage people to be thinking about their work-life balance and be thinking about what tweaks they could make to make working agreeable longer. So I've been urging people to take what I call the Sunday night calendar test, where you're looking, I always do this sort of, you know, late Sunday afternoon where I look ahead at what I have coming up. And inevitably there will be days where you'll be like, oh yeah, I've just got to slog through that day. Not my favorite cluster of activities there. But then this other day, oh, you know, I get to see this person for lunch and I get to do this, this, and this thing that I really enjoy. For me, it's a day of like deep research and writing is my favorite day when I see just a fully open day on my calendar. I'm very happy with that. But I would urge people to kind of take that test. And are there adjustments you can make to the work that you're doing so that the weeks ahead are generally more agreeable to you? Because I hate the idea of people just crawling to the finish line. So looking at the nature of the work that you're doing and you're trying to pull forward the things you like more and pull back on some of the things you like less. It's really wise to use sort of the post age 50 period as a time to experiment a little bit.
And what would you say to a 35-year-old?
Those are peak multitasking years for many of us where you're working on your career. I think focusing on enlarging income is really the name of the game at that life stage. And everything gets easier if you're able to find ways to grow your income through your work. You're probably, you may be involved in raising children and may have a financial toll related to that, or will certainly have a financial toll related to that. So there's a lot going on at that life stage. I wouldn't prioritize retirement. And in general, I find it very difficult to get younger people excited about retirement savings. In fact, I think that we need to urge younger people to think about scoring nearer term victories, and that can get them engaged in saving for the long term.
So what would be a short-term goal or short-ish medium-term goal? What might that be?
Home ownership, I think, is a big one. That for many people, if they can, and it's not the right answer for many people, but if you're able to score that victory, then it seems like savings as a habit just gets easier. Hitting nearer term savings goals, I think, can help you develop positive savings habits that can help you.
Thank you. Super. We take a short break and we'll be right back with you, Christine.
Of course. Thank you. I've enjoyed the conversation.
If I was to ask you three words that come to mind when I say retirement, what would you automatically think of?
It would feel distant, hard, and unachievable at the moment.
Yeah,
that's just the way it feels.
Freedom. I hate to say the word old, but older, getting older. Maybe stress.
Relaxation, not having to deal with work.
Freedom. Relaxation. Apprehensive. Future? I don't know. That's probably about it. Future and then being old, I guess. So when I say the word retirement, what kind of words come to mind?
I think about flexibility. I think about family. And I think about time.
So those three words are quite positive.
Well, I think I have a demanding job and you know, the working week is typically fills the majority of my time, Monday to Friday. And I just think not having to work, 9 to 5 would be great, because there'd be lots more time in my hands. I think I play fill with other things, so I think I would probably be just as busy as I am now. But I suppose there's that flexibility to not be quite so defined by the conventions of an average working week.
The first word was actually cozy. Wanted to be, old Alistair wants to make sure that he's going to be all right, be able to sit in his chair and, watch TV and not have to do too much. But I think retirement's maybe evolved a little bit more in the sense of, experiences that you can get.
I can't stick my head in the sand. Like, I do need to think about it at some point and do take it seriously at some point. But I think now it just feels so far away. I'm kind of like not thinking that far ahead, I guess. But I know that I need to think that far ahead to be smart and savvy.
Yeah, I think you need to always make sure you're positive about the future, and it kind of positivity breeds positivity. Mm-hmm.
So before we return to Christine here, we are with our panel from Aegon, who will be joining us each week to give us their unique perspectives.
We have Steve Cameron, Director of Pensions. We have Kate Smith, Head of Pensions. And we have Andy Manson, Chief Marketing Officer at Aegon. Thank you so much for joining.
Hi, Tom.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Most people, I think it's fair to say, don't give pensions a lot of thought for a long time. But you've given it, of course, a lot of thought throughout your careers. So what have you learned about how people think about retirement and how they ought to think about retirement?
I think a lot of people, when they're younger, think that retiring is a great thing. It's an aspiration. When can I retire? How soon can I retire? And I think that the older you get, and let's be open here for your listeners, yeah, I'm in well
You're
into
still
my...
still very youthful, Stephen.
I'm into my 60s, my early 60s, I should stress. And I think that the older you get, the more you realise that retirement isn't just a good thing and work just a bad thing. Retirement is a different phase of life, and it has its benefits. You have more time. I'm not retired. I'm still working. You have more time that you can use to enjoy. But equally, when you're at work, you've got a lot of purpose, and you've got a lot of, if you've got an interesting job, then it can be really good. So I think that the older you get, the more you realise that retirement isn't something that the sooner you can retire, the better. Some people will feel like that if they really don't like their job. But so because of that, when people say, when can I retire? I sort of think, well, it's not about when can you, it's about when would you want to, and to balance up the benefits of work against the benefits of being retired. But the thing that I really don't like is when I see magazine articles saying, how can you retire at 40? And I think, oh, for goodness sake, you know, that's not the route to happiness. That's not what we all should be aspiring to. But
yeah, do you know, I'm talking quite personally on this, I was 50 last year, and that definitely changed my mindset a wee bit. I've always had a kind of directional view of what I think I want to do when I retire and hold I think I will be. But actually being 50 last year crystallised my thinking a lot and caused me to think about it in a lot more detail. And, you know, my kind of youngest is 11 years old. So some of this is kind of anchored to, you know, at what point, you know, he is no longer a kind of a financial liability, so to speak, to us. But I think something that actually is important to me is health. So I spend a lot more time focused on my health now,
right,
than I did in my 30s. Because I recognise as I get older, whatever I do with my life next, being in good health is going to be critical to getting happiness out of my life. So I focus a lot more on that. I have an idea of when I think I will be financially independent. So then I have choices to do things because I want to rather than because I need to. But at that point in time, do I see myself stopping work completely? I don't think I do, because I enjoy what I do too much, that I make choices about what I want to do rather than what I need to do, and that I'm in sufficient good health to be able to enjoy life and spend time with those who are important to me.
Kate, do you want to add something?
Yeah, I just find the whole concept about retiring really interesting and personally extremely challenging. I really do. I mean, I don't see why you need to do it to some extent and just give up. I really don't. I just don't understand it to some extent. You know, because obviously I'm building up wealth because I'm saving into my pension. I paid on my mortgage. But also, like you, Andy, I spend a lot of time on my health because my health is more important to me than anything else. Well, family, of course. Family number one than health. It's about living longer is what I'm thinking rather than retirement. I think that's it. I'm thinking about longevity, not about retirement. So I want to have a good life. I want to do the things that I want to do. And the health is the key enabler for me. Mm. I'm surrounded by people who are saying, when are you to retire, Kate? And we've retired. When are you going to do it? You know, why are you still working? I get that in the gym. I mean, unbelievably, because it's 60, that's what you do, is it?
Wow, I didn't realize this. No.
It's still right, very okay. Old-fashioned thinking, right.
The other thing that you talk about, reaching age 60, and I think that was a kind of the normal retirement age in certain jobs. You know, people were, their employer told them, you retire when you reach age 60 and you get a carriage clock and off you go. And that's completely gone now. An employer can't tell you when to retire unless there's a health and safety reason or whatever. But it's much more your choice now whereas in the past it was the choice of your employer. But the other thing that a lot of people think is, oh, I retire when I reach state pension age because that's when my state pension kicks in. And for some people, to stop work before then just won't be viable because they won't have any other income. But if you have saved in a workplace pension and you have got other savings, then you don't need to wait till state pension age, or indeed you don't need to stop once you reach state pension age, but state pension age keeps going up, so the challenges of working beyond that get higher.
Listeners who are perhaps at that stage where they are reaching 60 and who are perhaps of that mindset of, well, here I am, I'm reaching 60, now I should retire. What should be...
I think you've got to start with what you want to do with your life and work backwards. And again, the research that we've done talking about, you know, the importance of having a balance of things in life that give you joy and purpose. And there are different ways of extracting that, your family, your work. But as you transition into retirement, whatever that means, you know, it's really trying to be clear on how the life you want to live, I think. And from that, then you can look at the money you've got and work at what choices that gives you.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It is about what is your life going to look after work? What do you want to do with it? You could have another 40 years and hopefully at least 20 years in good health if you look after yourself. So, you know, you don't want to be just sitting at home watching daytime TV, do you? You want to be out there talking to people, doing things, being curious still, you know, meeting new people, having adventures. I mean, why can't you? Why can't you do that in your 60s? You could do it in your 20s, because in your 20s you had no money. In your 60s, hopefully you've got the money and you can do it.
Yes, absolutely. This is a bit of a wild card, but so let's see where this takes us. A bit of a taboo question. Is talk of retirement poverty just scaremongering?
No.
No, reality for many.
I mean, Kate and I do a lot of work liaising with the government, and some government policies can help pensioners, and some government policies can be challenging. Now, we've been talking a lot about the situation where you have built up your own private pension, where you've been in an employment which has given you the opportunity to do that when you've had some money to save. But that isn't the case with everyone. And there will be many pensioners who've not had the opportunities that we've perhaps been talking about. And for them, every penny counts.
Mm. Yeah. I think ultimately, you know, life happens. Things happen that stop people doing what they thought they were otherwise going to do. You know, health incidents for themselves or for their partner or somebody in their family. They become caregivers. They become ill. They got made redundant. All these sort of jolts along the way, which can be very disruptive, and they can't get back into things.
Societal level is, I think, it's a matter of great concern. The declining levels of home ownership amongst the young. And, you know, in terms of being able to retire on your own terms, owning a property is so important. But also I'd encourage anybody listening to really to take whatever steps you can to get on the housing ladder in your 20s and 30s.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's not something that we are hearing often in relation to retirement planning. And it was something that surprised me at one point, that all the retirement income calculators, they're assuming that you have your home paid off. And as you say, Andy, that's not the reality for many. That has been a very insightful panel. Thank you so much for your time, and I'm looking forward to catching up again in the next episode. Thank you. Okay, we're back speaking to Christine. Christine, I know you are giving this subject of money and happiness a lot of thought, and as the industry is scaring people into, you know, that there's going to be retirement poverty, etc., unless they save really hard and, you know, all this. When on the other side, we're seeing from the happiness research that is out there that older people, by and large, seem to be happier. And from what I can tell, it is almost regardless of their financial situation.
You're absolutely right that the data generally shows that retirees are quite happy regardless of their economic circumstances. There's apparently an adaptation that goes on where we adapt to whatever life has thrown at us. We see this when we look at the data on people's finances as well. I think part of what might be going on with older adults who are retired is that they have more time, and they have more time to explore pursuits that they did not have time to do while they were working. And they also have more time to invest in relationships. So those are things that contribute to happiness. In fact, relationships are really everything when we look at the connection between, what makes us happy throughout our lives.
It's interesting, isn't that point of adaptation is not one that we consider so much. We kind of think, well, you know, now we earn the money and we need to continue earning the money. And that's where all the concern comes from. But that's a real positive message, actually, right? That we can adapt.
Well, exactly. And, it's also, I suppose, sort of a negative message, because what the research also shows is that we also adapt to whatever, when things get better, we adapt to that, and then we start ignoring it. And I often think about this when I was in my 20s, I would walk by this beautiful building that I wanted to live in my neighborhood. And I remember thinking it had these perfect wreaths at the holidays. And then eventually I lived right in that neighborhood, right in a building similar to that building. And I remember one day I just raced past the wreaths and I was like, oh, the wreaths are there. It had stopped really resonating with me. And so I think, whatever it is in our lives, we just graduate upwards and it stops mattering to us.
You said that about, can I just pick this up, investing in relationships being an important part. And that's, of course, also a chapter in your book. How can people think about this?
The relationship issue is a through line in my book. When I reflect on some of the major themes, that is definitely one. So we had a whole chapter, a conversation with Laura Carstensen, who is head of the Stanford Center on Longevity. And a lot of her work has been about how relationships matter to our lives and also how they change. So one dimension of relationships as we age is that we tend to be a little more selective about who we spend time with. I think the term she uses is that we have these peripheral others in our lives. So an example, she said, would be the parents of your children's friends, for example. They might be perfectly agreeable people to have a beer with after the soccer game or whatever, but they maybe aren't just the closest and dearest friends, that we shed some of those people as we move through the life cycle. And we tend to emphasize closer, more deep, meaningful relationships more.
I want to invite a reflection on one thought that I'm pondering a lot, and that is the importance of self-knowledge. You know, to achieve better long-term outcomes, we need to understand money mindset, things like, you know, our attitudes, our beliefs, our emotional reactions, these things. But we also need to have an understanding of the things that, you know, make us feel useful and competent and worthwhile, as well as the things that give us relaxation and gratification and joy.
Well, it's an interesting idea. What are the things they wish to be remembered for? I think maybe that is a good way to light up self-knowledge, to think about, do I want the people around me to say at my funeral that, oh, you know, he did this, this, and this at work?
I wanted to ask this one. What is the one thing that people listening right now can do to improve their retirement?
So I'll go to a financial thing, which is in the years leading up to retirement, to the extent that you can make retirement savings as frictionless as possible, to me, that is the best way to set yourself up for success, where maybe you're not running a really tight household budget. In fact, in my household, we really don't do any budgeting at all, but we do have all of our savings contributions automated. And so what's left over is whatever we can live on. And I think that's just a really nice strategy to just automate all of those contributions. It ensures that some money is going into investments when the market's good. Some is going in when it's bad, which is generally a better time to invest, but you might not feel like investing. So that's just a really tangible kind of one size fits all retirement savings idea that I think works.
And was an example of how you can be frictionless. What is the friction you see typically?
Well, the friction is that people's budgets get tight, so they may not allocate the funds. You know, if they're sort of leaving it to month by month discretion, you inevitably have other things that are competing for that, for those funds. If you just set up the contributions so that you're never really seeing or feeling the money, that tends to remove that friction. And then the other big friction is that when the market goes down, we tend to feel less like investing.
And then lastly, with regards to your own money personality, you certainly don't strike me as a spender, but perhaps an investor, accumulator, giver. Like, there's all those types. What would you say you are?
Probably more of a saver these days. And I will say, my husband, when we got married fairly young, and he was quite influential to me just in terms of being a saving person. And so I have evolved into a saver to the point where I think it's actually going to be difficult for me to spend in retirement. I don't like to see my balance go down. And I know this is a huge psychological challenge for a lot of people. What set you up for success during your accumulation years does not actually lend itself to having a healthy disposition towards spending. So I think it's actually something I'm going to struggle with and probably need to get ahead of.
We have another episode with Dan Halit on the skill of spending money and how that isn't something that we're typically learning. And that is oftentimes something that perhaps, you know, comes to bite us when we are in retirement and, you know, then obviously living off our savings, needing to spend that money. Where can people find more about you, where if they wanted to learn more?
Well, thanks, Thomas. I've enjoyed it very much. My main home on the internet is Morningstar.com. My book is called How to Retire. I am also a co-host of a podcast called The Long View. And that's a weekly interview format podcast.
Yeah, perfect. And absolutely would encourage everyone listening to check these things out, because it's always very, very insightful. It was absolutely great to have you, Christine. Thank you so much. See you around.
Thanks, Thomas.
So for me, like retirement and stuff like that, I would say more the lines of is you've done your time working. It's now time for you to relax, enjoy the rest of your life that you've got, sort of thing. Money matters because you've got a good pension behind you, and that's going to do you for life. And just doing the things that you want to do while you've got the rest of your life to live.
You see people a lot that are maybe older people that are stressing about, is this enough money to last me for the rest of their life or whatever. So I do think it brings a sense of freedom, but I also do think it maybe brings a bit of stress.
I don't feel organised in my finances. I don't feel like I focused on that over the past kind of 10 years or so. Obviously a lot more now that it's kind of more prominent in my thoughts.
I mean, I think people think about retirement probably a lot earlier now because it's a lot more mainstream in relation to the press and things like that. My goal, you know, when I get into my sort of mid-50s or indeed early 60s, is to be able to be comfortable enough that I can make a decision on when I want to retire.
Retirement's a goal for everyone, and it gives you so much time to do the things that you maybe don't get a chance to do when you're working a 9-to-5 for 35 plus years.
And I kind of remember having that first meeting with a financial advisor and him saying to me, when do you think you're going to retire? And I said, 65. He kind of laughed and he was like, and I was thinking, well, that's when people retire. And then he was like, maybe you might want to retire before then. And I was like, okay. And incidentally, I don't know that I will retire before then, but that was then.
It's probably not going to be until my mid-70s until I retire. I think at the end of a long career of working for decades, I do want to be rewarding. I want it to be vigorous. I want it to be new for me. I want it to be full of hobbies. I want to be full of travelling. But also, I guess in a way, it's scary because I don't know what my health looks like. I don't know what my pension's going to look like. I don't know what the current state of the world is going to look like for me in the future.
Wow, this has been insightful, hasn't it? When I knew we were going to do our very first episode on retirement, my aim was to bring to life that financial planning isn't just mechanics, as I said in the intro. It's also mindset, and it's to do with relationships, with values, with identities, with your centers. Yeah, are you family centered? Are you work centered? Are you community centered? Perhaps even self centered? Perhaps even money centered? And I'm really happy that by speaking to Christine and talking on this subject and our panel, and we could in fact bring that to life. So the line, retirement planning isn't just a math problem. That's what Christine spoke to and spoke to so well and so deeply. I think that really showed how, yeah, one-sidedly we're used to talking about this subject of retirement. Remember, I asked her in the end, what's the one thing people can do so as to better plan for retirement? And she gave a mechanical tip, a really good mechanical tip, something that you can do on the financial side. Now, to sort of balance this, I want to give you a mindset tip. And I want to invite you to think about your future self, be that in retirement or be that in 5 years' time or in 10 years' time, and ask yourself questions like this. What will you do day in, day out, right? What will give you a sense of purpose? What will make you feel relaxed? What will make you feel happy? Who will you be spending time with? Will you have a pet? Questions like these, yeah? I think these are good questions to ask yourself whenever you think about your future self, but certainly when you think about how to retire. Now, for this episode, thank you so much to my guest, Christine. Details of her book are in the show notes. Thank you also to the panel and our contributors. But until then, I'm Dr. Tom. See you around.